Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No! My car!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Right action follows awakened consciousness. In this episode, Eckhart explains to a live audience that a deeper movement has brought them together, and the goal is to help them awaken. He says, many ancient spiritual teachings point to this timeless idea of metamorphosis, including the parables of Jesus and others. He explains that the root of the word Buddha means to be awake in Sanskrit. Eckhart explains, when we shift to higher consciousness, we have access to wisdom, which is far deeper than intelligence. Ironically, he says, more knowledge will not save us. In fact, intelligence often works in service of madness, technology, war, and weapons of mass destruction. He believes only wisdom, together with right action, will help our ailing world, and these can only spring from awakened consciousness.
Wonderful to be here after such a long time in this beautiful place. Thank you for your welcome. Let's come into the present moment. It might be a good idea. Which simply means to start with, to acknowledge the present moment. What is? If you have encountered any kind of irritation on your way here, which is quite possible because one encounters many sources of irritation every day, then I suggest that you look at it, feel it, and instead of saying, "I am irritated," you say, "There's irritation in me, and I can feel it." This is a big difference. It's not just to play with words. The difference between saying, "I am irritated or angry or sad or whatever the condition may be," and saying, "This is what I feel," or that is what is in me at the moment. By saying that, you've taken a step back. You're not in the grip of the irritation. You're the awareness behind the irritation, and that's the beginning of an awakening, to be the awareness behind whatever arises. And if one starts with any whatever has arisen in the past hour or in the past 2.5 years, many people carry all kinds of stuff that has accumulated during that time, particularly when we all had to face the same collective challenges. It could be fear, it could be anger. You are beyond that, but most humans don't know that yet. The term we use is awakening. We are talking about the possibility of awakening. This is why we're here. Our evening, this gathering here, is an event that should be seen in the context of the awakening of human consciousness. And almost all of you are here because you are already awakening. If you were not already awakening, you would perhaps never have heard of this, or would see no point whatsoever in listening to me. And I welcome particularly those few people here. I'm sure there are some who were dragged here by a friend or relative and said, "You really must come and listen to this guy." And if that is the case, if somebody told you that, I'm sure he or she is right. The question is, though, whether this evening will be meaningful to you. It may be, in which case it could bring about the beginning of an awakening, or it could be that you're not quite ready for awakening yet, which is fine, in which case you would find this evening at best boring and possibly even irritating. And that's fine too. If you absolutely cannot stand it anymore, feel free to remove yourself. Nobody will judge you, because most people here are sufficiently enlightened not to judge anybody else. And if you're not ready, then, as I said, it's absolutely fine. All it means is you need a little bit more suffering. The universe, or whatever you want to call the greater intelligence that lies behind all phenomenal existence, will make sure that you get what you need for your awakening. So that's all very well. Now, it may well be that awakening is not necessarily something, even though it may be happening to you, it may not necessarily be a term that you would have applied to what you experience as perhaps as some shift in consciousness, some improvement in your mental emotional state, a greater ability to harmonize with the present moment. But perhaps you would not have called it awakening, or you may not be quite sure why we call it awakening. And if you're totally new to this, you say, I'm already awake, what is he talking about?
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, efoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
When something happens to your car, you might say, but what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
But if you look at traditions, spiritual traditions, it's a very ancient term, the term of awakening. It goes back thousands of years to the time of the Buddha, and perhaps even beyond. When the Buddha is not a name. The term arose when 2,500 years ago, there was a man, Gautama, who later became known as the Buddha. People asked him, he was giving spiritual teaching, probably about living in the present moment. And they asked him, who are you? Who are you? And instead of giving his name, he said, I am Buddha. At that time, it wasn't a recognized title, but the root of the word Buddha in Sanskrit is to be awake. So all he said is, I'm awake. That's who or what I am. Well, that's interesting. So the Buddha is the one who is awake. Now, and you might look at there's hidden teachings in Jesus in the Gospels that are not usually understood by conventional Christianity. They have a superficial interpretation of it. We could call that exoteric Christianity instead of esoteric Christianity. Jesus says, for example, now I'm going to impress you with my knowledge. Chapter 13, verse 37, Gospel of Mark. He says, and what I say to you, I say to all, stay awake. Oh, stay awake. And many, there are various parables about staying awake. So his disciples, his function was to awaken his disciples, to bring about at least the beginning of the awakening process. And then now the challenge is to stay awake. We start to awaken, but now you have to stay awake. So quite a few times in various places, Jesus talks about the importance of staying awake, staying alert. All ancient teachings, all true deep teachings point to that. It's a timeless message. And one more thing, if you go back and look at spiritual traditions, in ancient Indian spiritual philosophy, there is a term which in Sanskrit is Turiya. Turiya means the fourth, first, second, third, fourth. Turiya means the fourth. Now what that refers to is the fourth state of consciousness. First state of consciousness is deep sleep. Second state of consciousness is the dream state. The third state of consciousness is conventional wakefulness. And the fourth state of consciousness, Turiya, is the state of, the awakened state, the aware state. So it points to that as ultimately the next stage in human evolution. And this is why we are here. To the wider context for being here goes far beyond the individual personalities that are here, including this personality. There is a deeper movement happening here that has brought us here together, and that is the movement of the awakening of consciousness. That's why we are here, and this evening is designed, one could say, or intended, to deepen or accelerate that awakening, and also to point out possible or likely obstacles that probably will arise in your life to prevent the awakening, because there are certain patterns in you that do not want you to awaken. The patterns that make up the egoic self, the egoic sense of self, which is the state of consciousness of normal wakefulness. But compared to the awakened state, normal wakefulness is a dreamlike state. Now, of course, I don't just want to talk about it. I would like this gathering to be experiential, so that it's not just words or concepts, although it operates, of course, also on that level, but something deeper arising, something deeper that is touched in you, and that perhaps by being here accelerates, comes forth more easily and more quickly. All spiritual teachings are really ultimately here to save time. Ultimately, you get enough suffering and you awaken eventually. And that is a strange thing. The awakening into this new aware consciousness, another word we could use, to be present, another word we could use to point to it. It strangely, and I must say, unfortunately, it doesn't happen while you are in your comfort zone. It hasn't happened to anybody in their comfort zone. Although everybody is longing for a comfort zone. I can finally say everything is fine. I've sorted out my life. My relationships are great. Not that you should not strive to have a great life, to live well, to achieve things, to have good relationships is a wonderful thing. Okay, that is true. But it's also true that quite often relationships are not that good. And it's also true that for many people, their main source of suffering is their relationships. And that's only one source of suffering. So many things make up your life situation. Your relationships are very important. Your health situation, your professional situation, your living situation, where you live, what your status in society, whether you consider yourself to be a success or failure, weird terms. And certainly, if you listen to this world to tell you whether your life is a success or failure, that is very misleading, because this world is, to a large extent, let's say, to put it mildly, a little bit insane. And if you allow the world to tell you your worth, that you're listening to a somewhat insane person to tell you who or what you are. So what awakens us is the difficulties of life, when you get a shock here and there. One word we could use is adversity. So we encounter many different kinds of adversity. It begins in childhood. There's no child that does not encounter already at an early age adversity, difficulties, challenges of one kind or another, some far greater than others. That is true. But no child is free of suffering. And even if you are a very conscious parent and a very careful parent, if you want to, you do all your best to prevent the child from suffering. You do everything in your power to prevent the child from suffering. And then if you succeed for several years in preventing your child from suffering on all levels, then unfortunately, the fact that the child has never encountered adversity will become the child's greatest suffering. So you can't win. And of course, adversity comes. It can come as a personal challenge, comes into your life, large and small. And usually people complain when challenges happen. Challenge is a term that is a kind of euphemism for something, but usually it's bad. But if you're spiritual, then you call it's a challenge. Well, that's good, okay. If you're not spiritual, so it's dreadful stuff, awful, awful. Oh, it's a challenge. It's easy to tell somebody else it's a challenge, but when it happens to you, it might be different. So challenges will come every day. Small challenges come, and then periodically, from time to time, bigger forms of adversity come into your life. It's inevitable. And that is always the possibility of awakening out of the egoic state. The possibility arises. It does not necessarily happen yet as one first, second, third challenge comes into your life. The possibility is there. So there are not many things you need to remember from this evening, because it's not memory-based, concept-based. But if you don't remember one thing, is when unexpected things happen that your mind says, this shouldn't be happening, why is this here, why does he behave like that, he shouldn't do that, he shouldn't have said that, that shouldn't be happening, why am I here, can't they do something about it, they really should. All kinds of narratives in your mind that make you unhappy, not the situation, the narrative makes you unhappy. Oh, that's an interesting thing, by the way. When you find irritation arising or some kind of suffering, the Buddha calls it dukkha, which is, he says, wherever you go, you'll find it, unless you awaken. Dukkha, usually translated as suffering, can also be translated as unsatisfactoriness, misery, unhappiness. Wherever you go, any situation, relationships, sooner or later, often sooner rather than later, something goes not quite right. Have a look at your relationships. You fall in love. Oh, that's the end of my suffering. And so you key at this early stage before you move in together. You can always tell when you're in a restaurant, when a couple sitting at having dinner, you can tell whether they've been married for a while or it's their first or second date. It's their first or second date. It's a totally different way they look at each other. They look at the other as a kind of god or goddess. They are not living together yet. And then they start living together, and then, I forgot to mention, the married couple, or the one that they've been living together for a while, they relate to each other in a different way. They may both be on their phones. And I sometimes wonder, are they texting each other? Or is one or both of them already looking at the app that they forgot to delete that brought them together in the first place? And saying, I want to see what else is out there. You begin to live with somebody, and then one day something arises in that person that you didn't know was there. Who is that person? Some kind of transformation. They're probably this nasty creature. Right? And suddenly and then you really begin to doubt, have I made a terrible mistake? Maybe you've already signed a piece of paper that's to promise you're going to be together forever. Then it's even more problematic. But no matter where you go, whatever situation you go into, you will encounter something doesn't quite work out the way it is expected. So humans have this vision that it is possible to achieve, to have your life work out on all levels. And for very brief moments in time, it is possible. My health is great, fantastic relationships, great income, wonderful place to live, beautiful children, they're all doing well. Everything is absolutely fine. It's everything on every level. Well, if that is the case with you at this moment, then just wait a little. And sooner rather than later, somewhere, something is no longer right. And life continues like that. But humans, they always believe there's something drastically wrong if they meet these unexpected challenges. There's something drastically wrong. Because they believe that the world or life is here to make them happy. And that is a huge misperception. And if that your belief is here, the world is here to make you happy, then you will become very frustrated because it can't do that.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
And so if you have this discrepancy, your expectation and the reality that life is always problematic, it always brings up some, no matter how much positive thinking you do, which is a wonderful thing to do, how careful you are in arranging your life, you do your best everywhere, even then, and you should do your best. And positive thinking is good, far better than negative thinking. So I recommend positive thinking, but it will bring good things into your life. But nevertheless, adversity will still happen. It is designed to be so. So humans have this expectation there's something wrong with their lives or with them. It isn't. It's that's how life works. A reflection of life is a movie. You go into, if you watch a movie, it's a reflection of life. Now, one could almost say the plot in every movie, if you want to simplify it to its simplest denominator, I can describe the plot in almost virtually every movie that you see in the following way. Very early on in the movie, something goes wrong. Something has to happen to the characters. They have to be challenged in one way or another, unless it's an absolute comedy and just everywhere and everything goes wrong and you're supposed to laugh about it. So something needs to go wrong, otherwise you will fall asleep in the movie or you'll walk out. So what keeps you awake in the movie is adversity that the characters encounter of one kind or another. Wow. So in the movie you demand it, but in your personal life you resent it. So the things of the world are not here obviously to make you happy, because if that were the case, the world would be failing you. And of course some people have this underlying belief that the world is somehow withholding something from them, that the world is being unfair to them, or they call it God, and then they stop believing in God, because if there were gods, wouldn't that mean that only good things happen to me if I go to church every Sunday and pray? Doesn't that mean that only good things will happen to me? And no, it doesn't. So they blame God, they blame the world, they blame certain sections of society, etc., for their unhappiness. But it's in the nature of things. Of course, we should improve our lives and improve society also. And there can be improvements, but to pursue a utopia, either in your personal life, a utopia of everything absolutely great, or to pursue a utopia collectively, which was the case, for example, with communism, there were perhaps some good ideas behind it. We must achieve equality, we must achieve to make life better for everybody. That was a good idea. What they neglected to consider is that it was only a good idea, but the awakening had not happened in any of them. So the egoic state just had a good idea. And then he tried to implement that idea with disastrous results. Disaster, millions and millions dead, killed. Disastrous results, starting with a good idea, good intention. Isn't there a proverb about intention? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. So good intentions are good, but in the absence of awareness, which is another word for the awakened state, in the absence of awareness, good intention is not enough. It often brings about the opposite. And awareness is inseparable from wisdom. What we call wisdom arises out of awareness. And so without wisdom, we cannot bring about a better world. In every avenue we pursue and any action we take to bring about a better world very often is counterproductive and actually makes things worse. You attack a problem without knowing all the repercussions and consequences, because intelligence is something that is different from wisdom. Wisdom is something far deeper. Wisdom arises out of the awakened state. Intelligence is usually in the use of the ego. So an increase of intelligence is not going to save us. An increase in knowledge is not going to save us. We already are drowning in knowledge. It's all in your phone. You can get all the knowledge you want in your phone and drive you crazy. So intelligence is often in the service of madness. You build weapons of mass destruction. You need great intelligence to build these things. And yet, its intelligence in the service of madness. So what the world needs is wisdom. Wisdom is able to see the totality of a situation, and it doesn't attack one problem. It sees the totality, and then right action, which is a Buddhist term that's frequently used, right action arises out of a right awakened consciousness. And right action cannot arise out of the egoic consciousness. So this is the context, this is the awakening. Now let's go more deeply into the actual realization of the awakened state. And what is the unawakened state? To put it in the most simple terms, the unawakened state is you are run by the thinking mind. There's a continuous stream of thinking that goes through your mind, and it absorbs your attention almost completely. You're completely in the conceptual mind. And you can look at a person, quite often you can see how absent rather than present a person is. They're completely in their thinking mind. You go, they're not really here. They just have enough consciousness so that not to stumble, to trip over some furniture or to stumble into something. Just enough awareness of their surroundings. And even then, maybe not even enough, and so an accident happens because they're totally in their minds. So there's the voice in the head. For many people, it never stops talking. It's a continuous little man or woman, or maybe a transgender person, who knows, and is talking, commenting on things, interpreting, judging according to its conditioning. That's how it is, and that often, I wonder what he's doing there. What is this? What am I going to do? Tomorrow, next moment, last moment, never this moment. Always previous moments or next moments. So you live almost exclusively in past and future. There is the burden of the past, which often for many humans, yes, there are some good memories, but even good memories bring up nostalgia because you feel bad because the good things are no longer here. So even the good memories can make you unhappy. But then there are many bad memories. Bad, there are grievances. There's all kinds of feelings of guilt. What you did, and you now know it was bad, you shouldn't have done it, but it was 20 years ago. Guilt or grievance, something that somebody or the world did to you. Oh, and you carry it like a burden. For many people, they have this veil. They look at the world through the veil of mental emotional conditioning. And more often than not, the veil is not a pleasant one. There are many people who carry a huge amount of grievances in their mental emotional field. And then if a person lives with a grievance or many grievances, they become a walking grievance. And there are people, many who are, one could say there are grievances looking for a cause. The slightest thing that goes wrong will add fuel to the underlying accumulated emotion, pain body, I call it, and it will feed that. It will look for things that are wrong. It will look for things to be unhappy about. It will look for things to criticize in others. So the egoic state is the state of complete identification with the thinking mind. And so then you live with the burden of past and future. The future often is anxiety, because who knows what's going to happen to me. The future, of course, also promises hope. Maybe things will get better. And of course, sometimes they do get better, until they don't anymore. So you have hope, you live with hope for, everybody looks for the future, for some kind of relief or liberation. I look to the future because I hope that my life is eventually going to work out. it's out there somewhere. It's going to work out. I still have that hope. I'm going to make it. That's a weird expression. No, are you going to make what? I'm going to make it. Yes, you can make it. What am I going to make? It means to arrive at some point of completion. And sometimes you do achieve things, which is wonderful, but ultimately what you were looking for through that achievement, it cannot give you. What you are looking for is something deeper. What every human is looking for is something deeper than the world can give you. The world can only challenge you, give you challenges and adversities so that you awaken. The world cannot, as I said, it cannot make you happy because it's not here to make you happy, but it has another purpose. It is here to make you conscious. That's how it operates. Also, that means whatever arises in the present moment is just right for this moment, for you at this moment. But if you're stuck in the mind, the egoic mind, then you will completely ignore or even continuously dislike the present moment. And that is an amazing way to live. It is dreadful. But millions still live like that without knowing it, unconsciously. They live for the next moment until they get very old. Then they know there's not much time left. Then the past becomes more and more important, the heaviness of the past. So living for the next moment is, for most people, unconscious and quite normal. They live hoping that at some point they are going to achieve fulfillment. And little fulfillments come here and there, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's wonderful when you achieve things. It's even wonderful when you fall in love. Enjoy it. It's not going to last, but enjoy it. I've met, fortunately, been able to meet over the years quite a few people who are, in the eyes of the world, highly successful. They've got everything. They've got fame, they've got money, they've got everything. They've got their private jets. They can go anywhere at any moment, can have anything, any pleasure. And they've told me that after they achieved fame and fortune, there was an initial time period when there was elation and they were on a continuous high. But then gradually, more and more, they experienced a very deep low in their mental emotional state, including depression and not wanting to live anymore. They had everything. And some had to go to drugs to make life bearable. Had everything. Wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. And then you can't fool yourself anymore. When you have everything, you can't fool yourself. When I achieve that, I'll be happy. No, you have achieved everything, but you're not happy. So the worst thing would be for you to achieve, to get everything that you want. And then you can't fool yourself anymore and look to the future for some fulfillment. And that's really dreadful. So that is the human condition. And it all is connected to who you sense yourself to be, your identity. Your identity as who you are, your sense of self. That is the foundation for your life, your sense of self. And everybody is concerned with identity. From childhood onward, the identity becomes very important. Of course, every human needs shelter and food, sustenance, shelter. And one can say almost the next thing, well, the next thing is, as a human grows up, needs some kind of love or affection. But that's already bound up with identity, because if you don't get love and affection, then you already have a deficient sense of self that develops in early age. So identity refers to your sense of self. And where does your sense of self come from? What does it mean to be you? And usually, most humans, especially those who are not awakening yet, They look to their sense of identity through a narrative that is connected to their past. So that's, I call that sometimes the story of me. So everybody has the story of me. I call that, it's a narrative. And you people call it, this is an interesting expression, they call it my life. So you think about my life, and let me think about that. Well, it's a mixture of good and bad. It's been all kinds of weird things in the past. And certainly, almost everybody says it didn't quite go the way I had imagined it to be when I was 18 or 17. And so many people have a feeling something went wrong somewhere. Strangely, many people have the feeling they haven't started to live yet. It's almost like I'm hoping at some point I'm going to start living. Soon. I'll start. I just need to meet the right person. I just need to get that job. I just need to find this or that possession, or if people would only recognize my worth, or one recognition of one kind. It's an unconscious process. The longing, my life hasn't actually started yet. And some people have that throughout their life until finally they are surprised that they reach retirement. And they still, maybe a few years before retirement, you can look to your retirement as the liberation. Then I can start living. Now I know when I retire, then I can start living. Okay, 2 more years. 1 more year, 6 months, and then the moment comes. You sit in your office, and the clock reaches 5 o'clock. It's my last day. And then off you go. And the first few days and weeks are great because you go to the golf course and then sit around. If you have sufficient funds, you can have your cocktails. You may not have sufficient funds these days, so that's another problem. So a few weeks pass, and you sit there, and then you take a trip, and you come back. And then you move to a better climate, because let's move to Florida, okay. And then you sit in Florida, just looking at the sun, and then they play another game of golf. And then a kind of fatigue sets in, and then their mind says, and now what? And nothing. Who am I now? I had this title, I had a job description, I was the vice president of this company, or whatever. And now I'm no longer a vice president. And a great part of my identity was derived from the concept of vice president of the company. And suddenly the concept has dissolved, and who am I now? Without that, well, that's weird. I get this weird feeling of not being nobody anymore. And so you're retired. And it's a strange thing that it is not uncommon for people to die just 2 or 3 years after retiring, because there's nothing there anymore to live for. They were looking towards retirement for some kind of solution, but that's not it. Everybody's looking where it cannot be found. It cannot be found in the future. That what you're looking for cannot be found in the future because, don't tell anybody, but there is no future. There is no future. There just seems to be a future. How can you say that there is no future? Obviously, there's a future because I'm going to have dinner later. And tomorrow I have to meet that awful person again. How can you say there's no future? Okay. In your immediate experience of life, have you ever experienced the future? Let me think about that. Actually, no. But haven't you always thought the future was more important than the present moment? And you treat the present moment as only a stepping stone towards the future. Continuously, you are on your way somewhere, which is on a practical level, future works quite well. But on a deeper level, future is very misleading. So one could say we are here for 1.5 to 2 hours. I don't know how long. But do you actually experience the 1.5 or 2 hours except as a thought in your mind? Ultimately, you experience this event as a present moment experience, not a future. There is no, you cannot experience the future. So what we call future, although necessary here to function in this dimension, it's a necessary and very helpful thing. Sometimes people look at me and they say, oh, you wear a watch? Why do you wear a watch? I thought you teach the now. And in fact, quite a few people have given me watches that they had specially made. They say, now, 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 now. And somebody else gave me a watch with a totally blank face. It has no mechanism in it at all. So when you look at it, you say, oh, it's present moment. No. Now, the reason why I wear a watch is there are two reasons. I don't like to be late and keep people waiting. I like to be on time, and on a practical level, future works quite well. We met here because we use future for practical purposes. Otherwise, meeting here, we would have waited a long, long time to meet here accidentally at some point. One day, accidentally, we will all come together here. It could be maybe 500,000 years, and then finally, here we are. So there is a paradox. On one level, you cannot deny the existence of time, certainly. In fact, on that level, where you cannot deny the existence of time, you also find that time, first of all, it gives you the possibility of growth and development, which is wonderful. It gives you that possibility on this horizontal level, I call it. On the horizontal level, time gives you all, a child grows, gets stronger, learns things, etc. And even spiritually speaking, on the perspective of the horizontal dimension, the spiritual awakening seems to take time. So time, on the one hand, seems like a good thing up to a point in a human being's life. And then time becomes your enemy, so to speak, because it is like an illness that you caught at the time of birth, and it's certainly is going to kill you. There's no doubt that time is going to kill you and me. And sometimes it does it almost in a cruel way. It begins to erode your body, which looked so great when you were young. Like, look at a fresh apple, put it on your windowsill. It just exudes energy and it's shiny, even without applying any substances to it. It's shiny on your windowsill, and there it is in its full splendor. And then you come back 2 weeks later, you left it on your windowsill, and it's a little bit less shiny. Something is beginning to happen to it. And then you come back 3, 4, 5 weeks later, and it's beginning to kind of shrink, and it looks wrinkly. And if you leave it for long enough, it goes. And the same happens to your body. You derive a significant part of your sense of self from identification with body image. And then this gives you, for perhaps 20 years of your adult life, it gives you a sense of who you are. If you're a beautiful, and in addition to having a beautiful body, you might be so lucky that you, even your face is beautiful. They don't necessarily go together, but. So the body becomes important for everybody, and even if your body is not beautiful, to some extent you identify, which means you derive your sense of self from the appearance of your body. So if it's beautiful, it gives you an enhanced sense of self, and that sustains you for quite a while. If you're really strong and beautiful, then that can become the main part of your identity, is that, because you impress everybody you meet, either with your strengths or your beauty or both. The ego seeks always some kind of, through comparison, it seeks some kind of superiority and it fears inferiority. It seeks superiority. So the egoic sense of self is then derived from this image-making in your mind, a conceptual identity, and it's never happy for long. It's rarely really at ease, except when it's taken a few drinks or drugs. Then you achieve some kind of self-transcendence, which is a spiritual term. Self-transcendence is to become free of yourself in the sense of egoic self, limited self. Self-transcendence, everybody is ultimately longing for self-transcendence. They don't know that. They are longing for it. And then all they can think of often is the need for some kind of substance to take in, for example, alcohol or some kind of smoke, or other things that are kind of quite destructive. When you have a little smoke, you may notice that a change happening, your mind slows down. The mind which fuels your sense of self, the narrative of me and my life, slows down. You can't think that much anymore about your problems. Fly wanted to listen to this talk. You can't listen. Your mind slows down, and you, after a few more puffs, you feel better. But why do you feel better? Because you have achieved a small degree of self-transcendence. You're not thinking about your problems anymore. You kind of a bit more present, and then you go. You suddenly feel like a weight lifted off your shoulders. And some people begin, they laugh kind of crazily when they smoke that stuff. And an outsider might think you've suddenly become enlightened. But you haven't. But you have had a little glimpse of self-transcendence. However, it is not a direction of true awakening, because the way I put it, you are falling below the thinking level. You think less and less, and that's why you feel happier. You feel a little bit more your sense of being in the background a little bit, but you are moving in the direction of back to sleep, to unconsciousness, instead of rising above thinking to a state of relaxed alertness, which is presence. So freedom from thinking is self-transcendent. It doesn't mean you don't think anymore, but you are no longer trapped in the dimension of thought which before gave you your identity. That is the identity where you mentally construct an image consisting of words and images that becomes you. You call it my life. And it's always problematic. There's no life that is not problematic. And people spend a lot of time thinking and talking about their lives. They carry a burden and they call it my life. Does that sound familiar to some of you? They walk with a burden, which is their life. But where is that life? What is that? Well, it's not your life. You call it your life, but the truth is, that's your life situation, which it has a past and future. But your life is inseparable from the present moment. It can only ever occur, be experienced, happen in the present moment. That's where life is. In fact, life and now are inseparable. There is no life apart from now.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No! My car!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.